28. On Parnassus, 10 years ago. Time went strange after that. As the madness of battle ebbed, the sickness took hold. Siv had been feverish once as a child, alternating hot and cold as her bones seemed to burn and her head throbbed in time with the ocean. This sickness was like that, plus peeling red skin, boils, and a feeling like her body was swelling, her skin stretching beyond capacity. Frey had it too, and Siv covered her face in salve and gave her a water skin to suck on, hoping the extra liquid and nutrients would help the girl fight it off. Back at the crash site, Phasma easily rappelled up to the cockpit. Although it took some time, she was able to haul Brendel up onto the nose of the ship. Together, they bashed in the remaining glass, shoved out the dead pilots, and set to work on whatever sort of technological magic Brendel used to send his call for help out into space.
What happened?
Frey kept asking. Siv wasn't sure herself. A simple disagreement had resulted in an insane journey and an even more unbelievable genocide. How could she tell the child that everyone she'd ever known was dead because Phasma and Keldo had failed as leaders? She couldn't. Especially not within hearing distance of the only two people who could save her life. All she could do was what her mother had done. Teach the child how to carry on. She explained the detraxers, showed Frey how to change the water skins, and had her repeat the prayer with each new body, for all that the beetles had already claimed most of their liquids. Frey didn't seem particularly interested, but then again, the little girl had to be in shock and growing sicker by the minute. Siv's movements were becoming slow, her sight blurry. She looked up to the sky, hoping to see a ship appear there and wonder what it would look like. Would it shine with all the might of the sun? Or would it block out the sun, as big as one of the Khonstar stations? When it did finally appear, it was nothing like what she'd expected. Brendel's ship resembled the falling star they'd seen, bright and silver and glowing. But the First Order ship that came to save them was black and sharp, cutting through the sky like one of the sharks they'd feared in the wild, cold waves of the Skyre. It hung there in the blue for a few long, dreamy moments before disgorging a smaller, blocky ship which sped directly toward them and landed on a blank stretch of gray sand. A hatch opened in a hiss of steam, and two lines of stormtroopers marched out in step, their armor perfectly fitting and painfully shiny.
"What is that?"
Frey asked. "Our salvation," Siv said, smiling. Phasma and Brendel rappelled down from his ship and walked toward the troopers. Brendel was in front, Phasma taking her position behind him, her blaster rifle held in both hands to mimic the other troopers. Between the two lines of white soldiers marched a young man about the same age as Siv and Phasma, a younger and thinner version of Brendel. The man's black uniform was spotless and crisp, his red hair carefully combed.
"The First Order is pleased that you survived, Father," he said with Brendel's clipped accent.
"I owe my good fortune to Phasma. Phasma, this is my son, Armitage."
Phasma inclined her head, but said nothing. Armitage looked her up and down, barely concealing his skepticism.
"The First Order thanks you, Phasma," the young man said, clearly trying to impress his father.
"She will be joining us on the finalizer, as will this child. Come now."
Brendel turned and held out his hand, and Siv clutched Frey close to her, realizing that no one had yet spoken of Siv's own contribution or her fate.
"Release her,"
Phasma said, and Siv's hands unclenched from Frey's shoulders.
"Come, Frey."
Frey looked to Siv, her eyes fever bright and full of fear.
"It's just Phasma," Siv said weakly. "Go to her."
Phasma held her blaster in one hand and offered her glove to Frey, who gave Siv a last troubled glance before running to take the outstretched hand. Siv stood, dizzy, and took a few faltering steps toward the others, careful to step around the bodies.
"And what of that one?"
Armitage said, looking at Siv with distaste.
"She's too far gone,"
Brendel said,
"and too soft for our needs."
Siv's heart dropped.
"Phasma?"
she implored. Phasma's helmet turned to her,
giving no hint as to what Phasma might be feeling.
When I ordered you to kill Randorus, what did you do?
Siv blinked against the sun, her world gone blurry.
I did what I thought was right. I showed him mercy.
You defied a direct order, and that will not be tolerated.
Brendel smiled and nodded.
You'll do well in the First Order, Phasma.
Armitage inclined his head. Shall we, then? The Supreme Leader has much to discuss with you, Father. All this time, the troopers had remained as still as stone. At Brendel's signal, they turned and filed back up the ramp and onto their ship, Brendel and Armitage walking side by side between their neat columns. After a brief pause, Phasma followed, holding Frey's hand.
Phasma?
Siv asked again, pleading this time, her world shattering as the last living person of her band turned to walk away. Phasma stopped and looked over her shoulder.
There's another station just over the next dune. It has mostly escaped destruction. Brendel says it may be stocked with medical supplies.
She continued walking. The last thing she said was,
He's right. You're too soft.
Without another word, without an apology, Phasma and Frey walked up the ramp and into the ship. Once everyone was on board, the ramp went back up, spilling gray sand. The ship took off in a gust of steam and noise, sending the sand swirling into great clouds that made Siv choke and squint. When she was able to see again, the only evidence that the First Order had visited Parnassus were tracks in the sand, an abandoned shipwreck, and the bodies of everyone she'd ever loved. As the bigger ship devoured the smaller one and disappeared, Siv's legs gave out and she fell to the sand. It felt soft at first, warm and calmly accepting. But then it began to burn, to itch. Siv was feverish. Her lips blistered and her eyes full of grit, though she couldn't tell if it was real sand or part of the sickness. But whether it was a dream or not, Phasma had given her a sliver of hope even as she broke her heart, and Siv was going to take it. She crawled from body to body, collecting everything she could find. Water, food, weapons, cloaks. She put on Pete's helmet and looked around in awe at a whole new world. It seemed to help block the sickness, or at least the blinding harshness of the sun, and she knelt to say one last goodbye to Torben. As she slumped there, sand burying her knees, she almost gave up. But then that persistent flip in her belly urged her to wobble to her feet and shuffle through the sand, dragging her collected bags over the next dune and toward the structure on the other side of the giant cylinders that Brendel had called a nuclear reactor. The white walls of the building showed marks of a blast, but were otherwise whole. The door slid open as easily as the doors on the other Konstar Mining Corporation stations. For all its faults, Konstar could build a hell of a door. The sand cascaded into the hallway sideways, and Siv tumbled in with it. She knew enough to press the button to close the door behind her, and moments later the building rocked, knocking her to the ground. When the world went still again, she pulled herself to standing, confused, but determined to keep on. She was familiar by now with the smooth white floors, with the orientation room, with the cafeteria full of food she was too nauseated to eat. She dropped her bags and put a hand to the wall, following the violet line to the medbay, a trick she vaguely recalled from Brendel's recovery at Terpsichore Station. Once there, she realized that she couldn't read any of the words or symbols on anything. But she did understand pictures, and a very handy drawing of a person putting their arm into a machine suggested that putting her arm into that machine might be useful. As if it had not been abandoned for over a century, the machine chirped to life and bleated repeatedly as a red light flashed. Soon, droids poured out of all the doors in the room, and Siv's first reaction was to panic. If these droids were as mad as the last batch, she was doomed. The first droid that reached her told her quite calmly that she had radiation sickness and would require several rounds of treatment. It led her to a bed and urged her to lie down. And she was grateful it said nothing about praise to the creators. The last thing she saw was a cheerful silver face, promising her that the Khonstar Mining Corporation valued her health. And then she felt a needle prick her skin. She fell asleep and was in and out of dreams for an indeterminate amount of time. Sometimes her gummy eyes would blink open on a smooth white ceiling. Other times she would see a droid standing over her with various instruments that would have been terrifying if she hadn't been, as she later learned, heavily sedated and strapped down. Siv didn't remember everything that happened to her in the following week, but the droids took excellent care of her. Fluids and nutrients and the very medicines that Brendel had promised dripped right into her sleeping body, and for a while she was able to forget the horrors of her last days with Phasma and Brendel. When she finally woke up, the droids were anxious to provide her with whatever she needed, and there was no mention of employment or remuneration. She was able to clean herself and slowly regain her strength and appetite. One day, they took her to a special room and showed her an image of her child moving on a big black screen, the baby's tiny frog fingers seeming to wave as Siv broke out into long, unshed tears of sadness mingled with newfound joy. The baby was healthy, the droid said. There would be no damage from the radiation. She would be born 5 months later. Siv named her Torby. When I visited them last week, Torby was a strong child, and Siv had found her peace living at Calliope Station. I told her I would send someone back for them. I hope I can keep that promise.